Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
He is the greatest fighter of all times next to me.
12 minutes past the hour. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide for Saturday, of course, coming to you the Saturday edition, 11 a.m. Pacific Time, live on Sports Byline. Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific Time as well, live on Sports Byline, of course, coming to you from the Sports Byline studios. You know, back when I was defending Golden Glove titles, they pulled this special weigh-in crap on me. They said I had to weigh in 2 weeks early at 141 pounds. In other words, the fight weight was 139 pounds, but you had to make 141 pounds 2 weeks before. They said they had to do this in order to bracket us all. And I thought they were trying to do it in order to make us old guys suffer a little bit. But the bottom line is, I weighed in at 141 at the Concord Pavilion, which is about 25 or 30 miles from where I live. And on the way home, I stopped at the Sun Valley Dairy because I was supposed to buy some ice cream for a party. Well, I bought 24 ice cream cups, 24 of these little ice cream cups. I ate all 24 ice cream cups in the parking lot. I never went to the party. They never got the ice cream. The kids are still screaming. Bottom line is, making weight is far more difficult than actual fighting. And I had sort of starved my way down to 141 and not done it the right way. I mean, had I been disciplined and made weight as you're supposed to, it's a science, I was just crashing, okay? So I crashed a couple times there. But having made 139 a couple weeks later and done well, I guess it was okay. But at the end of the day, making weight is far more difficult than fighting people. I kid you not. On that note, we take it to the Bronx and bring the Bronx Bomber himself, boxing's PhD, Mr. Socrates Palmer. And how are you, and how's the young man, Sebastian, doing?
Sebastian's doing quite well. He's growing every day, and very, very blessed to have him in our life. Thank you for asking.
Okay, Puerto Rico, Puerto Rico, known for its boxing, history, legacy, the whole nine yards. I can go into the names, but you got a new kid on the block. His name is Berlanga, Edgar Berlanga, 16-0 with 16 first-round knockouts. Why do I think that he can't catch? Why is it I'm sort of inclined to believe that guys that run off these incredible knockout records somehow don't catch as well as guys that don't punch that well? Is it a myth? Am I lost there? Talk to me.
Well, you can only go by history. And we have seen guys that are tremendous punchers, however, have suspect chins. You know, it's kind of like live by the sword, die by the sword. One of my favorite fighters coming up was Donald Curry back in the day, you know, tremendous puncher. But I believe he was stopped four times himself. In recent memory, Randall Bailey, tremendous knockout ratio. But he was stopped, I think, about three or four times himself. So historically, you do see that. Edgar Berlanga, the jury's still out. I mean, he's 16-0 against very nondescript competition. And I understand. I mean, the thing is, with fighters today, especially when you're with a monster company like Top Rank, your career is, we're seeing it unfold on television. So there's those fights that maybe you would get against the tomato can of the month, you're seeing it as opposed to just reading about it, you know. So, you know, the jury's still out of my book until he fights someone credible. From my understanding, he's supposed to come back into the mix in April against the notorious TBA. So probably another knockout, and they're building up a character, you know, and I respect that. That's his gimmick. He's a knockout fighter. You know, he's got this first-round knockout streak going. But what's going to happen when he faces somebody that says, okay, you buzz me. Let's see if you can take mine. That's what we're going to see, the true, if Edgar Berlanga is a real fighter or not. He's a New Yorker, like myself, comes from a great lineage of Puerto Rican fighters, and he's kind of being seen as the guy to be the heir apparent. And Top Rank has done a great job with the Puerto Rican fighters, Miguel Cotto, of course. And the New York fight scene really thrives on a Puerto Rican fighter. You know, when Felix Trinidad lost to Bernard Hopkins, another great puncher, New York boxing really suffered. And then Miguel Cotto was able to pick up kind of like right where he left off, and he sold out the Garden many times. And I think that's what they're eventually looking at with Berlanga. Hello?
You brought up, of course, Donald Curry, the Cobra from Texas, and of course they trained him hard. They used to train him like 12, 15 rounds sparring in the sun. I kid you not, in these hot gyms down there, and I think Fort Worth and around that area, straight up though, he was a good fighter. But I ask you this, how the hell did he lose to Lloyd Hunnigan? And didn't Lloyd Hunnigan lose to Jorge Vaca? And if ever there was a guy I could beat, now I'm not bragging or boasting, it was Jorge Vaca.
That was at one point considered maybe the greatest upset of all time when that happened. I remember on HBO. Sometimes you take a guy lightly. And Lloyd Hunnigan, you know, he had his moment in the sun.
Don't you think his moment in the sun was when he flipped out psychologically or had a psychiatric hold put on him a few years ago? That was a little bit more bizarre than some of his in the ring antics.
Yeah, he definitely has had a challenged life post ring, but he's got his place in history. You know, he's kind of like the Buster Douglas of the welterweight division. You know, he had his moment.
You know, speaking of Donald Curry, of course, him and Mike McCallum, that was my honeymoon fight. I took the wife, the mother, my mother and my stepfather and the entire family went down to Las Vegas, of course, and watched his fight. And I told my stepfather to bet on McCallum. He was a bigger guy. I thought he would weigh in about 170 pounds. He'd be too big for Donald Curry, who was a welterweight coming up. And my stepfather kept saying to me, but he's 2.5 to 100. I said, my grandpa, just listen to me. Right? So when Grandpa went and dropped $500 on Mike McCallum, and I think he was like 2.5 to 1 underdog, all right? So after the fight, Grandpa was bragging about how slick he was betting this $500, blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm saying? 2.5 to 1 odds. But yeah, Mike McCallum starched him with one punch.
That was it's actually very underrated in terms of the great fight. They fought that fight at a close distance from the first round all the way until it ended. And it was just, you were kind of like sitting on like pins and needles, like somebody's going to get hurt because they were throwing really nice shots. Mike McCallum, one of the underrated great fighters of all time. He put the Cobra to sleep. He was the mongoose that night, you know, and, really, really good fight. One that stands out in my childhood. Very underrated. I would definitely recommend anybody to go back on YouTube and check that out.
You know, Mike McCallum, of course, the body snatcher, what he's like 35-9, I think was his actual record as a pro. I'll check that out. No, that was his amateur record. As a pro, he was 49-5 with 36 KOs. Never got stopped. One draw. Here's a good one. We're running around the MGM Grand Hotel. I think we're trying to find a press conference. It's post-fight or something like that. We're going, and we can hear Don King scream, but we can't find him. We can hear him, but we can't find him. So we don't know exactly where he was. And Mike McCallum was with me, and he said to me, he said, Pedro, why did you write that I was 39 years old or I was 40 years old? Whatever I wrote in Flash Magazine, I wrote that he was much older than he said he was because I traced him back to the 1974 Golden Gloves in Florida. Okay, so if he was 18 years old in 1974, I said add the numbers, whole 9 yards. So he's chasing me around the MGM Grand. We're having fun. Pedro, how could you say that? How could you say that? I said, but I also said, yeah, I think you're one of the greatest fighters of all time. And I think he was. I think a body snatcher was probably one of the most underrated fighters in history without a doubt. And I'll tell you the truth. Tommy Hearns ducked him. Sugar Ray Leonard ducked him. Marvin Hagler ducked him. Roberto Duran ducked him. None of those guys wanted any of McCallum. None of them.
McCallum, unfortunately kind of got the bigger fights towards the end of his career, for James Toney, Roy Jones, right? Maybe too good for his own good, you know, and, you mentioned those four legends. I mean, it's kind of hard to say that they ducked, but I guess, I mean, they never hooked it up, you know, for some reason. I guess he wasn't worth the risk, but Mike McCallum, very underrated. The body snatcher, he lived in Brooklyn for a long time. I don't know if he still does, but,
Vegas, baby.
Tough man. Jamaican descent, I believe.
Great fighter, no doubt about that, and a very, very, very proud, native of Jamaica, and of course they're proud of him, the body snatcher. You know, I went down there, and all they wanted to talk about was Mike McCallum when we talked boxing in Jamaica. I was there on a vacation. They were there, of course, to, talk boxing. Hey, Saki, you got another segment in you?
Absolutely, sir.
All right, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live World. When we come back after the break, I'll press boxing's PhD, Socrates Palmer, on a couple of other issues, including Ryan Garcia and Manny Pacquiao. Is it a fight? Is it an exhibition? What the hell's going on there? We'll find out after the break. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
I hope that you understand not that one single person, not one single committee can do anything for boxing. It is absolutely necessary that we all get together, we work together, we respect each other, we like and love each other. I hope that we understand that by being public figures, we are targets for character assassination. I hope that we understand that if we want to be leaders, we have to convince with actions, to show always good faith, to love boxing and love boxers. We should not answer a slap with a slap, but with action and facts.
I played Don Jose Suleiman because I posed that question to our boxing PhD, Socrates Palmer. Boxing sort of is, you know, split up as the country is politically. I mean, the bottom line is there's certain guys with certain promoters, and one promoter won't work with another in order to make a super fight. You know, back in the days when there were two basically super promoters, and Bob Arum and Don King, they hated each other in public, but in private they got together and made money. Why can't Al Haymon and Bob Arum and these guys all hook it up?
Oh, boy. I don't know if it's ego or just the money. I mean, they must be making good money without each other, or else, you know, why would they cut their nose to spite their face? You know, like I always say, at the end of the day, the boxing fan is the one that gets hurt the most. Then probably the fighters' legacies will always be in question. You know, were they really the best fighters of their era? Were they really the best welterweight at this time? Which is a dilemma that we have going on right now with Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence. You know, who's really the best 147 pounder? I mean, it depends on what side of the fence you're on. You know, if you're Team PBC, you're screaming Errol Spence. If you favor the top rank in ESPN, then Bud is your man. The fighters are getting paid good nowadays, even without the mega fight. So maybe that clamoring, you know, kind of like grabbing a promoter by the lapel and say, hey, man, you know, I want this fight, you know. Maybe that's part of the reason that it's not happening, but I don't want to get too far off your topic. Why aren't these fights happening? I don't know. I guess the networks have to put the pressure on.
I don't think it's a network suck. I mean, I don't know who's got to do it, but I mean, Charlo, the 160-pound Charlo, is stuck over there wherever he's at, Fox or Showtime, whatever, and he can keep fighting guys like Scott Cuddy, and it's not doing him any good. I mean, I really don't think it is. As far as if he wants to make it to the superstar level, he's got to step up and fight Canelo Alvarez, at least make a move at 168, and great fighters move up in weight. Of course, that's why I slammed Marvin Hagler, the fact that he made his bones by beating up on smaller guys, and Roberto Duran, who almost beat him, and Sugar Ray Leonard, who did beat him, and of course the war with Tommy Hearns, and then his war with John Mugabe. Those were all guys that were smaller than Marvin Hagler.
And Marvin himself wasn't necessarily a large middleweight.
True. I mean, got a good point there.
About 5'9"? Good point.
You know, I used to watch him train in the last couple of days at Johnny Taco's gym for the Hearns fight, for the Duran fight, and for the Leonard fight. And the Mugabe fight as well, his last four fights. It was quite an experience. Johnny Taco loved me, and he brought me in there like I was his brother in this, and he said, you can train. I said, what do you mean I can train? He goes, don't worry about it. You can train. He goes, this is Marvin's time. He goes, no, you're my kid. And the reason why I bring that up is that, you know, he's been gone now, I think, since 1993. And he was such a mentor. I remember going to Las Vegas the first time and him telling me, "You want to do radio?" This is what he said to me. "You want to do radio?" I said, "Yeah, I want to do a boxing radio show." And Johnny Taco says to me, he goes, "And you want to come to Vegas and do it?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Man," he goes, "this town chews people up and spits them out." He goes, "I don't think you're going to be able to make it." So when he did the last show with me a week before he died, he did the last show. He remembered that first show a decade or so prior. And he said, "You know, remember when he met me in 1980, he said, "You remember when I told you that you'd never make it in Vegas, son, blah, blah, blah." He goes, "You're on three radio stations here." Anyway, the reason why I bring him up is that, of course, Johnny Taco's gym is still rocking and rolling. I was the last time I was in Las Vegas, I always drive by and go to the parking lot, of course, behind the gym. That's where Donald Curry and the whole crew, man. I mean, it was just we had wonderful times there. Hagler trained there, Tyson trained there. Tyson also trained at the Golden Glove gym. But back in the days when Las Vegas was happening and boxing was jumping, Johnny Tacos was the place to go. So I went off subject there. Let's go back to subject. Ryan Garcia and Manny Pacquiao. Is this a fight or is it an exhibition or is it just BS?
Can it be a little bit of everything? you know, at first, you know, when the rumors started coming out, it was a fight. Then something had came out the next day that it's an exhibition. Then I saw Ryan put something out that it's a fight. So, you know, to me, it's a joke if it's not a real fight. You know, what's the point? I mean, it's not like, now if Manny Pacquiao was, let's say, coming out of retirement, okay, that's a different story, but Manny Pacquiao is still an active fighter, although he hasn't fought in a while since he defeated Thurman, but he's still an active fighter, and I believe he holds a world title. Ryan Garcia and Manny Pacquiao, if the fight happens, let it happen. I mean, it's kind of like the natural progression of boxing. I mean, we've seen this a million times with the young star on the rise takes out the old legend, you know, in this case. It would be something that would springboard Ryan into megastardom, I mean, worldwide, I mean, beyond the Instagram. And if he's able to retire Manny Pacquiao, it's a great fight. Right? Well, you know, I hope it does happen. Now, if I'm Ryan Garcia, be careful what you ask for, you know. For some reason, this old man is still pretty damn good. And if you thought, you know, Luke Campbell, you know, could punch a little bit.
Okay. And Luke Campbell ain't nearly as fast as Manny Pacquiao's, even at his age. Mikey Garcia making noise, of course. He initially said a couple months ago after Teofimo Lopez upset Vasyl Lomachenko, he would drop to 135. Now he's back at 147. He wants to fight at 147. Lopez, is Lopez headed for Australia? Is that almost certain?
That's what it seems like. It's just waiting on the official word from Top Rank. I'm expecting that it happens probably sometime before the end of the month that they make that fight official. It's a good fight, you know. Cambosos is not great, but, you know, he fights in an exciting style. You figure that he's going to be right in front of Teofimo Lopez, and that's pretty good. That's a pretty good thing if you are promoting Teofimo Lopez. It's a fight that's tailor-made for Lopez to win in spectacular fashion. I believe they know each other from, they've sparred before, so there's no animosity from what I understand. And if they can make it in Australia in front of a crowd, that's great.
You know,
okay. I hope it happens.
Question for you. Should kids 10 years old be hitting each other in the head?
Wow. I've seen it, you know, and I'm sure you've seen it. You know, it's
a no, that's a yes or a no question there, Psaki. Now I'm not gonna let you wiggle on that one. Should 10-year-old kids, should even if they have headgear on, should they be getting hit with gloves?
I don't see anything wrong with it as long as it's controlled. You know, I don't want to see, you know, cockfighting, you know, just kids wailing away and just, you know, if it's done controlled and sanctioned, I don't see anything wrong with it. I know it's been done for a long time.
Sock, let me say this. I won't mention their names, okay? All right. But I know four guys that boxed when they were 8, 9 years old. Okay. And they're all local. They were all pretty good amateurs. They're dead or they're punchy. There's no exception to the rule here. There's absolutely no exception to the rule. The brain is not set yet. And I think when you're getting pounded around at 9 and 10 years old, I just don't think that's good. I mean, I got away with it boxing at 12. Having a few little smokers down at the Boys Club in San Francisco. I got away with it, okay? But I just, man, if it was my kid, I would say no.
Yeah, I mean, 12, okay. You're just about a teenager. You know, it's, I don't know. I mean, you know what? They allow Pop Warner football, you know, and that's, you know, that's not a walk in the park. Kids get concussed with that and even soccer.
Yeah, you know, I never got permission to box at all. I remember my mother found out, like, you know, through the grapevine.
Well, you know, it's probably the best thing that ever happened to you. So you're disciplined, got you in the shape that you still keep yourself at, and, you know, learn how to defend yourself, which is a pretty good thing in the mean streets of San Fran, right?
Yeah, I guess it's okay. Anyway, I've had a good run. I wish you the best. You have a great weekend. Kiss Sebastian. Of course, tell him the Ring Talk family is pulling for him each and every week to get bigger and stronger and keep eating his food and pooping and all that kind of good stuff. Just doing what Sebastian needs to do right now.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, sir. Appreciate it. Enjoy your weekend and enjoy the Super Bowl tomorrow.
Boxing. Who's going to, real quick, 10 seconds, who's going to win?
I'm a Raider fan. There's no way I could root for Kansas City.
I got to run then. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Sock copped out on the Super Bowl. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.